Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Green Party candidate for President of the United States, Howie Hawkins. And Howie is going to talk about the selection of Kamala Harris on the Democratic ticket for VP. So, Howie, when you saw that Biden had picked Harris, what was your reaction?
Well, she has very similar politics to Biden. You know, it's neoliberal capitalism. She doesn't have much of a foreign policy record. But certainly on domestic policy, you know, Biden is the legislative architect of mass incarceration and mass surveillance. And
right.
Kamala Harris has a long record as the district attorney of San Francisco and the attorney general of California of being a foot soldier in that, you know, the war on drugs that has led to mass incarceration. She called herself the top cop. So while she was district attorney of San Francisco, she increased drug prosecutions. And as the attorney general of California, she made nearly 2,000 arrests for marijuana. Now she says she wants to legalize it, but that's not going to change anything because Biden and the Democratic platform say they're not going to do that. She defended the three strikes legislation in California and opposed legislation to deal with racial profiling. I mean, the record goes on and on. There were questionable killings of black men in San Francisco and Los Angeles. She refused an independent investigation when the cops were let off. So there's a long record there. And then when it comes to corporate crime, I mean, she had over 1,000 violations documented by her staff as Attorney General of California by Steve Mnuchin's One Bank or One West. And these were violations of foreclosure laws and mortgage fraud. They had them, and she declined to prosecute. And she, in return, got a $2,000 donation for her U.S. Senate campaign from Steve Mnuchin. She's also got donations from Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump. So,
right.
You know, she's not going to be strong on corporate crime, which is a much bigger problem than street crime in terms of what it costs us. And as far as civil liberties and, you know, reforming, ending the war on drugs and mass incarceration, she's going to be on Biden's team. And that's not good news for, you know, the millions of families that have been devastated by that war on drugs.
Let me ask you this question. You know, with the murder of George Floyd, and which precipitated a lot of demonstrations across the country, Lives Matter and stuff. All of these people that demonstrate in the street for Black Lives Matter and mass incarceration, against mass incarceration, they're not saying anything on the selection of Kamala Harris. What do you think that is?
Well, she's a black woman, and the symbolic politics say something and will matter in terms of how people vote because they're not going to look at the real record. So I think that was part of Biden's thinking. It was a response to those demonstrations. And I think Kamala Harris in the Senate has made a lot of noise about some reforms. They're far short of what's needed, but they're better than what she was doing as the Attorney General of California, which tells me she's a weather vane. She's one of these politicians that puts her finger to the wind to see which way the trend is going, which, you know, means that we can pressure her and get some changes perhaps. But she's vice president, not president, so it probably won't make much difference in a Biden administration.
Okay, she is. A vice presidential pick. But when you take a look at the whole picture, Biden's not young. his thinking process is questionable, you know, and this possibility, you know, he says he's only going to serve for one term. And given his health and his mental state, he might not even be able to last that long. And Camilla would be the first woman and the first black woman to serve as president of the United States. Do you foresee that happening?
I think Biden's choice picked the leader of the Democratic Party for the 2020s. I think it's going to be Kamala Harris. For progressives, it's a similar situation we had under Obama, who symbolically represented progress. But when you look at the practical policies, you know, he was very much a conservative corporate economist in terms of his economic policies and
right.
his foreign policy. I mean, he escalated the wars in the Middle East. And actually, this was Biden advocated this strongly. Instead of putting U.S. troops on the ground, we attack people by drone strikes and often, you know, get innocent people killed that way, which builds resentment against us. So the problem progressives will face is, are they going to look at the policies or look at the symbolism of a black woman as president? And
what
I think that's,
think
that's what we're going to face in the 2020s with Kamala Harris.
You know, a lot of people became disappointed with Obama. And this is kind of like the same scenario. Do people ever learn?
Well, yeah, I think people do learn. But I would say I wouldn't blame the people. I would blame the left in this country. Because it did go to sleep under the Obama administration. It was reluctant to criticize them. The peace movement collapsed. The response to the Great Recession was more tax cuts for the rich than it was actual public investment in what we need. And he got a free pass. And that's, I think, a problem with the left. You know, they'll mobilize demonstrations now and again, but they're not building organizations that can educate people and have an educational program and a way for people to participate and develop themselves as thinkers and critical thinkers about what's going on. So, you know, people then are vulnerable to the superficial messaging they get on the mass media, which really doesn't look at alternatives. I mean, just think about this. Ralph Nader is probably responsible for more progressive legislation and regulation at the federal level than everybody in the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives combined today, you know, from saving
wow.
hundreds of lives on auto safety to the Environmental Protection Agency to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to the Cooperative Bank. You could go on in the things that Ralph Nader shepherded through, not all by himself, but he was a leader in the 1960s and early 1970s. And when was the
mm-hmm.
last time you saw Ralph Nader on CNN or MSNBC? He's a pariah because he challenged the two corporate party duopoly. And so what we have is corporate state media for the two-party corporate state. And it's more sophisticated than state media in one-party states because they give us the illusion of choice. And at the superficial level that the media covers things, you know, how many people really know that Barack Obama used to have what they called Terror Tuesdays, where he would sit down and decide personally what drone strikes we would make and who would be killed? I mean, I don't think many people know that. How many people know that his administration initiated the nuclear modernization program, which has destabilized the world and led to this new nuclear arms race? How many people know that under his administration, black America lost half its wealth because they didn't prosecute the corporate criminals and, you know, get people's homes back for them, because that was the wealth that black America lost? That's the real record. And, yes, I don't think you can blame the people so much because between the corporate media and the absence of an organized left, where are they going to find this stuff out unless they, you know, really dig? So you know, I put the onus back on us. We got to get organized and serious. And it's tough this year because so many people, you know, Trump has the left scared stupid. I mean, there are people saying in New York State, where Trump is 39 points behind in the latest poll, behind Biden, that you got to vote for Biden, you know, to stop Trump. Trump is stopped in New York. The question is, are you going to vote for a neoliberal hawk like Biden or for the progressive alternative like we're offering with the Green Party?
Well, during the primaries, Kamala Harris was pretty hard on Joe Biden as far as his personal conduct. And now that she's the VP pick, I don't think that's going to matter anymore. Don't you think that's pretty disingenuous?
I guess you could say that. You know, I think her criticism of Biden touting at the time his relationship to segregationists in the South to say he could work across the aisle, she said that was hurtful. Yeah, I think it was. Because in that same period, Biden said he was against busing for the purposes of integration. And it wasn't the busing he was objecting to, because lots of people were being bused in the early 70s to keep segregation. And he said at one point that he didn't want his children going to a quote-unquote racial jungle. I mean, that's the real Joe Biden. You look at his attitudes about, you know, whether people can get along. Look at Iraq. You know, once the Bush administration started having people in Iraq identify as Shia or Sunni, it really created a problem and opened the door for the sectarians, the religious fanatics in both the Sunni and Shia communities to do ethnic cleansing. And there were many mixed families in Iraq that had both Shia and Sunni, you know, husband and wife came from the different confessional traditions. And they had no problem until the Bush administration did that in the occupation. And so Biden, when, you know, later on was suggesting, well, we should partition Iraq into Sunni, Shia, and Kurdish areas and just, you know, divide the country along ethnic and religious lines, which would just have exacerbated. But that tells me he doesn't really believe people of different backgrounds can get along. So, you know, that's probably the real Joe Biden from what I read. And Kamala Harris is willing to go along with that. So I don't know if that reflects her real feelings. Probably not, given her background. But, you know, she's working for Joe Biden now.
Right. What do you think a Harris-Pence vice presidential debate would look like?
Oh, it'd be painful to watch. Pence will get his head handed to him. I mean, he's a wooden speaker. He's not very facile. He's not very informed. And she's a prosecutor. I mean, I think, you know, you've seen that in some of the hearings she's done with as a senator. So, yeah, that would be no contest. Pence would be roundly defeated.
Well, but there's still talk of presidential and vice presidential debates, right?
Yeah, the so-called Commission on Presidential Debates has them scheduled. The vice presidential debate, I believe, is in Salt Lake City in early October.
Okay.
But this Commission on Presidential Debates sounds like a government agency. In fact, it's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Democratic and Republican parties. So They use that, and the corporate media goes along with it to exclude other candidates on the ballot. You know, both the Green Party and the Libertarian Party are on enough state ballots that we could win the Electoral College. That would be an objective criterion in which who to include in a real presidential debate. And, you know, the American people should hear all their options, but they don't, because, you know, my campaign, I mean, NPR hasn't even given us a segment. They did give the Libertarians a segment after their candidate got the nomination, but they haven't called us. I mean, we've been telling them, we've been pitching it to them, but, you know, they're just acting as if we're not in the race. And that's what state media does. In this case, it's corporate state media, because there's about six big conglomerates that own most of the media that is broadcast or major print media.
How many states do you have you qualified for?
People can vote for us now in 36 states. Four of those are write-ins.
Okay.
We didn't get the petition done to get a ballot line. And we expect to be on the ballot in over 40 states. And we're fighting right now. And we've submitted in some states. And, of course, the Democrats are hiring high-priced lawyers to challenge our petitions. That's going on in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin right now. And, you know, their objective is to bleed us dry and divert us. And so, you know, it's people ask, well, why don't the Greens run more candidates, you know, at the local level? Well, we do. We have 129 elected officials around the country, locally elected officials. But it's hard as hell to run candidates when you don't have a ballot line. To run as an independent for Congress in New York, you need 3,500 signatures, which really means 7,000, in a six-week window.
Right.
In Illinois, it's over 15,000. In Georgia, it's over 20,000 signatures. In Indiana, it's over 30,000 signatures. In Alabama, 30,000 signatures. Indiana, 40,000 signatures. You want to run as an independent for the House of Commons in the United Kingdom, it's 10 signatures. So we have a policy in this country of suppressing third parties, which is part of voter suppression. We know the Republicans are purging the rolls. They're not putting enough polling places in minority communities. Right now, the Trump administration is trying to destroy the Postal Service so mail-in ballots don't get counted. And that has to be fought. But instead of focusing on that, the Democrats are focusing on keeping the Green Party out of the election. And that's a much smaller factor for them. And what they do is say, you know, in New York, Governor Cuomo got a law passed under the cover of the pandemic when the budget was passed, that tripled the number of votes we need to get to keep our ballot line in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of 50,000, we're going to have to get over 150,000. And if we fail, we got to get 45,000 signatures in a six-week window just to get back on the ballot. And it used to be 15,000 signatures, which was very hard. You know, we've done it, but the idea is to kill third parties. And that's how the Democratic Party suppresses votes. When Jill Stein ran in 2016, the exit poll showed that 61% of her voters would not have come to the polls if she was not on the ballot. So that's suppressing votes. And it's shameful, really, that the so-called left in New York and the so-called Democratic Socialists in the Democratic Party, not a peep from them about killing third parties in New York State. And that's the Democratic Party. So it's not just the Republicans that are attacking our democracy.
Does it go beyond Cuomo, or is this a buck stop with him?
Does the buck stop with him on this voter suppression?
Yes.
Yeah, our understanding is, you know, he was the one that pushed for this, and he got Jay Jacobs, the executive director of the Democratic Party, to push this originally in the commission they set up to do public campaign financing. And then they added this, which wasn't their charge. And we beat them in court on that because it was unconstitutional. The legislature has to pass laws. You can't appoint a commission to write a law. So then they came back, Cuomo, that pushed that through when they were adopting the state budget in April. Hello?
It seems like I'm having technical difficulties. Let me get Howie back on the air.
Hello?
Howie, I had technical difficulties. We're back on the air now. And my question was, you know, if we go down, they go down also. They're trying to preserve a system where ultimately they're going to fail and we're all going to fail. Don't they realize that?
When you say they, you mean the people voting for the Biden ticket?
For the elite of both parties.
Well, the elites are very focused on their own interests and short term. You know, the elite capitalists, they're looking at the next quarter's, you know, financial report. How much money did they make? They don't do long-term planning. They want quick profits. And the political stance by those people. And they do what their capitalist masters tell them to do.
So how do you think this whole election's going to play out? We're in the middle of August now. What do you foresee happening from now until November?
Well, I think Trump is toast. I mean, he's in the middle of the worst public health crisis in a century and the worst economic depression since the Great Depression. And it's not getting better because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He's a loser. I mean, he gave up on the COVID infections, and he's fantasizing that it's just going to go away. I mean, and I think, you know, even a lot of his own supporters see that. They realize every time his lips move, he's lying. So I don't see how he can come back. So I think, you know, the Democrats will probably win in a landslide. And the question for progressives is, are you going to disappear by voting for Biden? And if you support, say, Medicare for All, nobody's going to know that. You get lost in the sauce. You know, a vote for Biden is a vote against Medicare for All and against, you know, real solutions to problems of the climate and the new nuclear arms race and inequality, where working class life expectancies are in decline because of 45 years of stagnant wages and rising health care, housing, and college costs, and people can't pay their bills. There's no solutions coming from a Biden administration. So the question for progressives, are you going to vote for the Greens and, you know, give us some leverage going forward to try to get something out of the next administration and to build the movement for the future?
Do you think that Bernie Sanders would have made fundamental changes had he won?
Well, it would be a very different campaign. I think he would have stuck with Medicare for All, which he's now compromised in order to support Biden. He now says he will accept a compromise of 55 and older and children get Medicare, and everybody else is left with, you know, the private health insurance companies or an option to buy into Medicare, which is, you know, much more expensive and, you know, won't cover everybody. You know, if he was running on his own, I think he would have stuck to Medicare for All. If he was elected, he would then have to fight the drug companies, the health insurance companies, when it comes to climate, the fossil fuel industry. And he understood that. And the question would have been, can the movement that was behind him stay mobilized and pressure, you know, members of Congress to go along with the mandate Sanders would have if he was elected? Be a very different dynamic. You would have, you know, a progressive. He's not really a socialist. He's not talking about social ownership, but a major means of production, economic democracy. So, you know, the super rich will still have concentrated economic power, and that would translate into concentrated political power. So he would have his hands full trying to get any of his program passed, and it would really be up to the people to put the pressure on. But that's not the situation we're in. And I don't think it was ever in the cards. You saw how the Democratic leadership closed ranks behind Biden when they got to South Carolina. And, you know, they shut Sanders out. And that's the Democratic Party. They let progressives give speeches, but when it comes time to make decisions, it's the corporate wing because they got the money and most of the Democrats are, in, you know, on their payroll. So it's fun to think about what Sanders would have done, but it was never in the cards. You know, the thing is, I think the lesson of the Sanders campaigns is run independent. When he was elected mayor of Burlington and many times to Congress and then two or three times to the U.S. Senate, he did it as an independent. The two times he tried to run as a Democrat, the Democratic Party cut him off. So I think the lesson for progressives is we need our own party. And then we're not going to get cut off before the general election comes.
Do you think that AOC is still a voice to be reckoned with, or do you think she's been silenced?
She hasn't been silenced, but she's made her peace with the establishment in the Democratic Party. I mean, she took the signature issue of the Green Party, the Green New Deal. That's what we were campaigning on in the 2010s. And when she introduced a non-binding resolution to Congress, she diluted it. She got rid of the ban on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure. And if we don't do that, we're going to be locked into decades more of burning gas and gas-fired power plants with methane leaking from all the pipelines and fracking the hell out of the country. And the climate is cooked. And she's now pro-nuclear power, which is, I mean, so dumb. You know, it's dangerous, it's dirty, and it's uneconomical. The levelized cost of new nuclear power is two or three times greater than the different solar and wind options. So why spend more to get less? And when they tried to build nuclear power plants in South Carolina and Georgia, they failed. You know, this is something that was done under the Obama administration with the federal government guaranteeing the loans. But due to cost overruns and construction delays, six of the nukes they started have, you know, they've given up on them. And they're still trying to get two in Vogtle, Georgia, completed. But they're way behind schedule and way over cost. So the fact that somebody's got her to come out for nuclear power tells me, you know, what we always say, you go into the Democratic Party to change it, and instead the Democratic Party changes you.
Wow. So we know who the vice presidential picks are. We know Pence. We know Harris. Who's running with you, Howie?
My running mate is Angela Walker, who is a black woman from the Milwaukee working class. She was a transit driver out there earlier in the 2000s and led her local union, ATU 998, to participate in the Wisconsin uprising against the attack on public employee collective bargaining. And then in the Occupy movement, this is 2011, and she was, you know, for her activism, her union made her their legislative director. And then they ran her for sheriff of Milwaukee against Dave Clark, who is that you've probably seen him on Fox News. He's a black guy, wears a cowboy hat, loves Donald Trump. And his slogan was, "Don't call 911, get a gun." The sheriff of Milwaukee.
Oh, my God.
She said, "We're going to fight crime by fighting poverty." And she ran as an independent socialist and got 20% of the vote. That's when I met her. That was 2014. And I met her again the next year. These were panels on independent politics out in Chicago. And I've known her ever since. And she was the vice president's candidate of the Socialist Party in 2016. And I knew her as somebody who would make a good teammate. You know, we work well together, and that's the most important criterion. She speaks very clearly with a conviction that people feel, so she's a great messenger. And she was at the top of my list. I mean, my campaign was, you know, saying, well, we should ask so-and-so and so-and-so because they got name recognition. Actually, none of them had that great a name recognition. But I said, no, I need somebody I can work with. And so, you know, finally I said, okay, let's ask Angela. And she said yes. That was the only person I asked, and I'm very pleased that she did say yes. So she now lives in South Carolina. She's a dump truck driver. As we speak, she's either dumping asphalt or sand on a road job. So she's a working person. So we got two workers for the White House. And what we're saying, I'm a retired team. So we're saying, you know, let's put a better class of people up in the White House than these corporate crooks and flunkies we've had up in there.
Has she gotten any press coverage at all?
She's got some interest, particularly in the black media. And, you know, we're getting some coverage. You know, the mainstream corporate media, very little, you know, mentions here and there. When we are covered, we're kind of a sidebar to the main election stories.
And I contacted her. You think she would come on All Exits Closed?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I think so, sure.
Oh, great, great. So I'll call you back for her contact information. So we have
sure.
a couple minutes left, Howie. Give people about your campaign and how they can contact you and what you need to mobilize the country to get rid of the corporate shills that we've got now.
Okay, well, what people should do is go to our campaign website. It's howiehawkins.us, and you can sign up to volunteer and get involved. You can donate, and there's lots of materials on the different issues we face that you can read. And what we
mm-hmm.
need, and, you know, we're here in New York where we have a real challenge keeping the Green Party ballot line. We're going to have to get at least probably 160,000, 170,000 votes. The only time the Green Party has done that in New York is when Ralph Nader ran for president in 2000 and I ran for governor in 2014. And so we have a real challenge, and we need people to in New York to get involved identifying supporters, you know, through various forms of canvassing, on the phone or door knocking with, you know, your mask on and your hand sanitizer and social distancing. So we can, you know, build a list of supporters that we can get out on election day and keep this ballot line so that then we can run candidates for local office and state office and Congress.
So
without
in that,
it's going to be very difficult to run alternatives to the corporate duopoly.
So instead of getting 50,000 votes to remain on the ballot, you're going to need 150 votes?
Well, it's 135,000 votes or 2%, whichever is greater. Now, in a presidential election, last time it would have been 155,000. We expect a higher turnout this time. So, you know, 160,000, 170,000 in that neighborhood is going to be the threshold. So, you know, we need people to come out. And like I said, the last poll shows Biden ahead by 39 points. Trump is not a factor in New York. So the question for progressives is, are you going to vote for an alternative, or are you going to vote for a neoliberal hawk like Joe Biden, who brings us to the status quo ante with no solutions to the problems of climate and inequality, the new nuclear arms race? And these are life or death issues. So it's important
right.
to keep an alternative on the ballot so we can keep fighting as we go forward.
So, Howie, I look forward to talking with you again. Our time is up. So you have been listening to Howie Hawkins, Green Party candidate for President of the United States. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter, All Exits Closed. Howie, thank you. We'll talk again, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.